This is Wade Rathke, and it's Wade's World. You know what that means. It's 9 o'clock in Little Rock, Arkansas for a half hour. And at 9:30, we're going to talk to people about the issues we care about and the people we care about. We're on KABF 88.3 FM and WAMF 90.3 FM. We're 100,000 watts in Little Rock of people power, the voice of the people, and we're the voice of the people anywhere that you can hear us. We're also live streamed at www.kabf.org. You know the story on Wade's World. Every week we talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Samuel Mitchell, retired professor, but an expert on the Southern Tenant Farmers Union, which began many years ago in eastern Arkansas. Sam, welcome to Wade's World.
Thank you very much.
Look, tell us, you know the history because your father, H.L. Mitchell, Mitch, was one of the founders. Give us a little bit of sense of where that was in Tyrons, Arkansas, and how long ago that happened.
It was 1934. The people were so poor, and things kept getting worse and worse. There was a large plantation there, and there was one meeting of the tenants. And at the time, you couldn't go any further down than being a sharecropper. Even being a tenant was better than a sharecropper. But anyway, the people's lives had become more and more desperate as the Depression continued on, which had started actually earlier in agriculture than other places. And so the South was fairly desperate. And in this situation, some people used to meet and talk. My father was one of them. He had come over there to try this system, which people claimed could grow two crops in Arkansas. Things were so good, it didn't work out. So he had opened the dry cleaners. The talks were between him running the dry cleaning shop and a friend who owned the filling station.
Right next door, I think.
Yeah, right next door. They now join in the museum, which has created the combination.
Well, we want to talk about the museum. But so the Southern Tenant Farmers Union started as a very small thing with half dozen, 14. How many was it?
It was 14, I believe. But it started actually as a socialist call for change in the 1930s, and members of the Socialist Party. And they brought down the leader of the Socialist Party, Norman Thomas. And Thomas told them they didn't need a party nearly as much as they needed the union. They needed the union to try and improve the economic conditions. And that led to the first meetings of the members, and many of whom were also socialists. But it broadened out, so there were a lot of people who weren't.
That's a part of Arkansas history a lot of people don't know about. I mean, Norman Thomas had a huge rally around Bryan, Arkansas, back during those same campaigns when he was running for president. But the Southern Tenant Farmers Union, now explain to people a little bit more if you can. Now, tenant farmer versus sharecropper, I mean, a lot of people don't have that sort of rural background anymore, even here in Arkansas. What was the difference, Sam? Do you know?
Well, the sharecropper had absolutely nothing. He was dependent entirely on the share of the crop that came in at the end of the year and how the landlord had figured out how much he had paid. Not the landlord, that's more concurrent to him, but the owner had figured out how much he paid. Whereas a tenant farmer usually owned his tools, and most times before tractors, he owned his horse or a mule. And so he owned something. Interesting that the union was called the Southern Tenant Farmers Union, sort of reflecting the aspiration that if you were still a sharecropper, maybe you could make it to being a tenant farmer.
I got you. And part of the problem that Mitch and the rest of the founders faced is that in the Depression, people were hardly getting anything for a bale of cotton.
That's right. It became close to being worthless, and to make money in the Depression was a major undertaking. And so People did all sorts of kind of things. It's interesting they sympathized with even the worst people. Anyone who would be taking on the system had the sympathy of people. I've always been convinced that Bonnie and Clyde survived as long as they did because they got help from people who didn't want them to get caught.
Well, there was certainly, you know, a big division during those days. Now, the demands of the Southern tenant farmers were actually, you know, relatively speaking now, wouldn't seem like much, but they were basically just asking for another couple of dimes on a bale, weren't they?
Yeah, that's basically it, so that they would be making a little bit more for the final settlement. But the issue really always involved with the settlement at the end of the cut-picking period, usually October, sometimes November, but how much one would make out of the crop depended entirely on how it was figured, because you got an advance on everything from the seed on down that the owner gave you, and so he deducted all of that from your share of the crop. And it was as much a battle over getting a fair share as it was over just raising the amount per pound.
But the notion of having a union in a rural setting, particularly in, as you say, the plantation atmosphere of tenant farming and sharecropping, and let's talk about rural eastern Arkansas, that was unusual, as was the fact that this was a union that its early membership was both black and white, and that was also unknown in Arkansas, and the whole thing must have been a unique enterprise.
Yeah, you know, it was the first union that was integrated, and always had the support of black leaders. It's interesting to me to find out that my father actually was served on the board of the NAACP in 1948. It was an honorary membership, but recognition of his long support for black leaders and the fact that they always supported him.
Well, that's exactly right. But there weren't many farm workers unions at all either, were there?
There had been one, but they had been wiped out. There had been a race riot right after World War I, there had been a farmers union formed then, but usually they had been attacked, particularly if they were all black, and that was one reason for forming a white and black union. It might be less likely that a purely black union would be attacked than an integrated one.
Yeah, and certainly there were sharecroppers unions that were started by the communist organizers and others, Nat Turner story.
The main rival at the time was in Alabama, the Alabama sharecroppers, which was communist supported. And in Louisiana, there was also one.
Right, and those certainly have been the topic of some interesting books as well. We're talking to Sam Mitchell about the historic Southern Tenant Farmers Union that was where his father, H.L. Mitchell, was one of the founders and a long time was the chief organizer. Because now, when they ended up on strike, didn't they? That was also almost unheard of.
Yes. But my father was always kept the title sort of like the British Union's of Secretary of Treasury. There was always someone else who was president. He wanted to be an actual sharecropper. Representing the voices, more directly than he did. But yes, they called the first strike, and one of the first strikes was reasonably successful, and they had an increase in the dollar upon more that they had. The second strike was less successful, and were virtually broken.
And a lot of people probably, even in Arkansas, don't know where Tyrons is. Let's set the geography for them. It's fairly close to West Memphis, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 70 miles from Memphis. My dad got his first car in and didn't know how to shift gears. So I drove all the way from Memphis in first to second gear.
I didn't know that story, but he's not the only one. And
right.
Once the union started and this first strike was successful, I know the activity of the SDFU went all the way towards Little Rock. I mean, Gould, for example, that south of Pine Bluff was also a hotbed of support for the SDFU, and so it ranged sort of throughout half of the state for a long time in the whole eastern quadrant of Arkansas, didn't it?
Yeah, it went into western Arkansas, and actually the biggest membership came in Oklahoma, where the natives often joined them. They said they already knew what unions were. The tribe was a union.
Interesting. Well, they also had a huge fight in Missouri that was very well known, too.
Yes. And that's being commemorated now in markers on the highway.
And the Missouri dispute was similar to the one in Arkansas, wasn't it?
Yes. The issue became more and more just throwing the sharecroppers out and replaced by the farm workers or machinery. And, I mean, it's hard to remember now, but, I mean, the biggest change which has ever happened in the United States was that 3 million people lost their jobs. That's how many sharecroppers there were once. And by 1960, there were so few that the Census Bureau didn't even count them.
No, the technological changes in agriculture have been amazing. But in some ways, the Missouri strike was almost like Occupy STFU. I mean, they had a long, almost like a tent city there for a long time during that action, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. The idea was to preempt the owners pushing them out, and they wanted to demonstrate their position and get support from it. They got people like the president's wife to write. And
Eleanor Roosevelt, you're talking about?
Yeah, Eleanor Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Actively supported it. And they eventually got some support from the state government as well.
Did they win anything on that particular Missouri action?
I think most of the people, at least for the time being, kept their homes, which is what they were fighting
mm-hmm.
And they were fighting as much for recognition as anything else, and recognition of the cause. They created, as a result of the action, they created a cooperative, which is part of the story. We created a cooperative farms, which were near the settlement. And there's still a cooperative going on now as a result of the 1939.
And this is in the Boot Hill counties of Missouri, that little heel of the boot that takes a chunk out of the northeastern piece of the map on Arkansas, Cape Girardeau, and down south of that area. So it was not that far from the eastern Arkansas base, but the base of the union ended up having to move to Memphis, didn't it, because of all threats and violence to Mitch and the rest of the organizers. Is that right?
Yes. Memphis was safer. It was also true that my mother's father had a little more political influence. And so if he moved to Memphis, he knew that Mr. Carmack would help protect him. The political boss of Memphis told him, in essence, you keep your union, you just stay out of my politics.
Was that Crump? What was that?
Is that Crump?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, that was one thing about machine politics. You knew where you stood.
Yes.
And he stood looking across the river, I guess. But because the planters, after that first strike, didn't learn to live and let live with the union at all, did they?
No. It was a strong opposition. There are areas in which there was sort of a let and live. I think Cotton Plant where your wife is from, is one of the most supportive of areas. And it was because of its connection with other people. My father found out very rapidly, and I think he believed that because he believed in news, too, that as long as he got support from outside, he could help prevent killings, or he could help prevent people being arbitrarily jailed, etc.
Well, and that's an interesting issue, and it's one that actually the first time I met Mitch, I interviewed him for a very short-lived lived paper called The Arkansas Advocate, and he told me that one of the key stumbling blocks they had was dues, is how to get support from the members sufficient to make the organization sustainable. So that's part of the story. He had to spend a lot of his time trying to raise money from hither and yon, actually quite successfully from people in New York, Washington, and around, didn't he?
Yes. He had so many people supporting him. When I started writing a book a little about some of this, I remember a couple of people said, where'd I send the donation? That we used to always send me my father a donation.
They just wanted to keep the habit alive, huh, Mitch? Hey, Sam? Yeah.
And one of the organizers, George Sith, was to say that they got into trouble, and they called Mitch, and then they wanted to know when the FBI was coming or somebody else was, so that they that people wouldn't get shipped out or beat up. And that was the type of support he was able to get. In the Civil Liberties Union, the government itself could often be reasonably supportive. And my father spent a year or two working for the National Youth Administration, which was also a tie-in.
Right. So it was somewhere between a protest group and a union in some ways, in terms of trying to stay alive for those years.
No, it was a number of different sorts of things. I would say one of the things that's important to remember is it was supportive of the idea of cooperatives. They saw the solution to sharecropping not being just a dollar more. They saw it as being replaced by cooperative farms. And they weren't the only one at the time. A fellow by the name of Lyndon Johnson over in over in Texas, was supporting cooperative farms. But there were a number of cooperative farms, which many of which didn't last. Some of them have lasted, which were a part of the whole pattern of union and union in Mississippi, the cooperative farm wasn't put out of existence until the 1950s when the White Citizens Council finally destroyed it.
Now, Mitch, even after the STFU and some of those activities started to wane, stayed active in agricultural worker and related organizing for quite a time, didn't he?
Yeah, until his death in 1984. He was always extremely active, and he was attended so much of the historian society, so they virtually considered him a member, and taking over all his papers and things on his death.
But he also tried to organize sugarcane workers in Louisiana, Manhattan fishermen on the Gulf Coast, and at different times had charters with the AFL.
His big move was to California.
Right.
They got beat, so they were the forerunners of the Foreign Workers Organization.
And one of his organizers was a historian of that effort for quite a long time, too. So he stayed in the labor movement. I know when I first met him, he was doing the publications and newsletters for the Meat Cutters local union in New Orleans.
Yes.
So I know he did that for a couple of years, and he ended up living in Alabama towards his last years, didn't he?
Yeah. Always has some ties or something to fall back on.
Absolutely. So I'm talking to Sam Mitchell, son of H.L. Mitchell, one of the founders and a longtime chief organizer for the Southern Tenant Farmers Union and a pioneer in agricultural unionism, often recognized by Cesar Chavez and others. They've organized a museum of sorts in Tyranza now, the old gas station and Mitch's Cleaners and whatever. Have you been there?
Oh, yes. I've been there several times. I've spoken there.
Right. And Arkansas State University has been helpful in that effort, haven't they?
Yeah, Arkansas State raised the money for it.
Well, that's helpful, Sam.
Hmm?
Raising the money is helpful. I know they, because I've been there as well. It's a wonderful facility. I don't know that a lot of people know about it, but tell us a little bit about what's there.
Well, you sort of described it. One of the interesting things is the part of the old building and the museum is the bank. And the bank was the opponent. And most of the people who were tied into the bank in the city were owners and things of that nature. But they literally adjoined my dad's office. And also my grandfather's barber shop was there. Though he died a year before the union started.
Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
And then the filling station are all assembled together. And this represents the period of what was once known as Red Square, where all of them were talking protests about the things they needed to get done.
One of the things that was interesting that the curator told me when we visited is obviously, some of the landowners, not surprisingly, even 80 years later, still own the land and dominate the local economy there around Tyranza. And they had sort of mixed feelings about the sharecroppers, about the agriculture museum being established. And finally, one of the, I guess, grandsons of the original plantation owners who they had the strike with actually came after hours and visited and even seemed somewhat favorable from what they told me. Have you ever heard that story?
I hadn't heard that one. I've heard one from another one of one of the ladies who's descended of a large owner in a nearby town. And she said, well, that's the way things were then.
Mm-hmm.
The world has changed, she hopes, for the better. But it was a highly stratified society. It was a result of slavery. The sharecropper was a replacement for the slave. And in many ways, it was cut down as such. The sharecropper had to ask permission to leave the land. That's how much it was a descendant of slavery.
I think people can hardly imagine it. The museum itself looks at both the union and its efforts as well as the whole agricultural industry and its change in that area. So it's actually quite fascinating, and it's definitely worth a visit if anybody is anywhere within the range of Jonesboro. It's between Jonesboro and Memphis, so it's not hard to get to, but I don't know if a lot of people even know it's there.
Well, quite a few people do. It's on the tourist information things, and a number come. I think one of the best things about it is the mural on the outside wall, which portrays the people and their struggles. It's quite neat.
No, it is. And luckily, there's been a fair number of books about the experience of the STFU. Certainly, Donald Grubbs' Cry from the Cotton. Mitch wrote a book of his own, which is very well known, and so have you. Tell us about those.
Mean Things Are Happening is my father's book, which is written from the poet and songwriters who wrote many of the union songs, which are sung by other groups today. But Mean Things Are Happening is particularly apropos for the Southern Tenant Farmers.
And that's a good look not only at the Arkansas experience, but a lot of his later organizing as well.
Yes, and it is an attempt always look from the bottom up and to see what things are happening to the people who are most nearly abused and who are most have the most difficulty. And as I say, it's always tied in to most of the struggles. One of the things which I would say is an accomplishment of the STFU was that they were highly responsible for bringing attention to abuses. Lynchings have been shown to have declined in areas where the STFU was organized.
Well, anytime people are organized, there's a voice and a fight back. Sam, let's have a minute about you. How'd you end up in Ottawa, Canada? And that's a long way from Memphis in this story.
Well, I'm a southerner and a Scotsman, and we're always wandering around. Most of my family has gone as far as Kentucky and Arkansas. And so I started originally in South Carolina. And anyway, I carried it a little further. My brother's in Florida, and I'm in Canada. And I went to the University of Chicago because most of my teachers in Memphis said, that's where you belong, up there. It has a reputation as the dominant sort of place. And my father had people, Paul Douglas, an economist, his students used to come down. So I always had contact with the University of Chicago. Now, anyway, I went to Chicago, and I spent a number of years there. And I was director of the labor education program that the university had. And when they were sort of shutting this down, I looked around and thought, well, maybe for a year or two, I'd go to Canada. 50 years later, I'm still here.
Well, and that's quite a story. Now, if people wanted to know how they could, I know you and I spent a lot of time for various times with the H.L. Mitchell Scholarship Fund and making sure that some of the legacy of Mitch and his work continues to be alive, and obviously KNON has benefited this as well. But how can people continue to support this effort, Sam? Is there a way they can get in touch with you or with somebody?
Well, I think they should get in touch with you, actually.
Well, now I'm all for that.
the scholarship fund, the internship, is something that my father wanted at the end of his life, and it needs some more money. The historians have virtually taken this over, so I got the money that you've had to run it. But there's some more money left that they have control of, and may be able to get more out of them. But we need help. For people to do studies and to do similar sort of work for those who are dispossessed, for whom mean things are still happening. And I would say a gift or a small grant to the scholarship fund, which operates on really now for a number of years on the original amount of $30,000, which isn't a lot of money.
Well, we've been able to do a lot with it. We're doing a very interesting study. I don't want to, you know, tell people too much about it, because we'll talk a lot about it when it's done, of how democracy really works in rural electric cooperatives. That's all been triggered and inspired by this fund. Sam, we're going to have you on another time, because we're out of time now, but it's the story of STFU is important to the history of Arkansas, and KBF has tried to put together some documentary radio shows, which hopefully we'll be able to put together in the future. This has been Wade's World on KABF at 88.3 and WAMF at 90.3 in New Orleans, and we're going to be with you in a week talking about North Carolina. We'll see you on Friday. Thank you from Wade's World.
You're listening to KBF 88.3, the voice of the people.